tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm Mark LeVonier. In this hour, shows for Thanksgiving. Later on, we'll hear the Hallmark Playhouse, but first, a broadcast of the Jack Benny program. And in this 1939 episode, there's a few funny references to having two Thanksgiving days that year, which was, in a way, true. Leading up to the presidency of Franklin Roosevelt and post-Lincoln, Thanksgiving was informally observed on the last, or typically the fourth Thursday of the month of November. But in the year of this broadcast, there happened to be five Thursdays, leading FDR to declare that the holiday would be moved to the fourth Thursday of the month to mainly favor the nation's economy, at the urging of business associations that noted most people began their Christmas shopping following Thanksgiving, with a later date in a five Thursday November translating to fewer sales. This move to effectively change tradition didn't go over so well in the country, with about half of the states sticking to the last Thursday of the month date, and three states, Colorado, Mississippi, and Texas, actually celebrating both. It wasn't until 2 years later that Congress established the fourth Thursday of November as the official Thanksgiving holiday, which, in the interim, was referred to by many as Franksgiving. This episode of the Jack Benny program first aired on November 19, 1939, on NBC.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens a program with It's a Whole New Thing. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the age of research, so we've been doing a little research on the subject of Jell-O. Well, we found out that the best days of the week to serve Jell-O are Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, which is just another way of saying that Jell-O is always, anytime, and every time, a perfectly swell dessert. For Jell-O brings you that full, extra-rich flavor, a flavor as fresh and sunny as the real ripe fruit itself. And all six of Jell-O's famous flavors have the same rich goodness: strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. A grand, satisfying flavor that has made Jell-O America's favorite gelatin dessert. And you like Jell-O's gay, appetizing appearance, too. Its shimmering, jewel-like colors that make it look so inviting. So enjoy some tomorrow. Just be sure to get genuine Jell-O and don't accept any substitutes. Look for those big red letters on the box. They spell Jell-O. It's a Whole New Thing, played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, once again we bring you our master of ceremonies, that bubbling personality, that effervescent comedian, that fizz, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny, the carbonated kid, talking. And, Don, I like that introduction. It fits me to a T. I am bubbling and effervescent. The fizz you can have back.
Well, Jack, let me explain. When I called you a fizz, it was really a compliment. I meant you were physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fizz for short.
I understand, Don, perfectly. In other words, if you called me a mug, you'd really mean I was magnificent. Is that it?
Exactly.
Well, Don, if you think I fell for that, you're a fathead, and that's short for your whole body. Anyway, Don, let's not get into a routine because I know how you appreciate a good story. And I heard a gag a few minutes ago that will positively put every one of your chins in motion. Oh, it's a honey.
It's a good one, huh?
Well, Virgil the sound man told it to me, and you know what a clown he is. Get this, Don. Don, I haven't even told you the story yet. What are you laughing at?
Is it the one about the nearsighted old maid that buried the midget?
No, heavens, no, Don. Heavens, not that one. This is a brand new story. Get this. There was a fellow walking down the street, and he was leading a pink alligator on a leash when all of a sudden it started to act up and snap at him.
Uh-huh.
So the guy got annoyed, turned around to this pink alligator and said, "You better behave yourself or I'll take a bromo seltzer and that'll be the end of you." Oh, isn't that terrific, Don?
Oh, it sure is. That Virgil has a great sense of humor.
Yes, gee, that was a funny story, Mr. Benny.
Oh, Dennis, I didn't see it. Did you like it?
Yeah. But there's one thing that puzzles me.
What?
If the man was walking down the street, where did he get the bromo seltzer?
Well, I don't know. He probably had a box of it in his pocket.
Oh, then I guess he had a glass of water in his other pocket.
Yes, Dennis, and a banjo on his knee. Now, don't worry about it. Say, you're here kind of early tonight, Dennis. Where's your mother?
She's across the street in the bowling alley.
In the bowling alley? Well, with her legs, she better watch out. Anyway, Dennis, I'm glad you're here on time tonight, and I'll try and make a habit of it.
You know, Jack, I can't get over that story you told me. It's silly, but I get a great kick out of it.
Isn't it ridiculous?
Yeah.
Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. What's so funny?
Mary, I must tell you, did you hear the story about the fellow that was walking down the street leading a pink alligator on a leash?
Is that the one where the man said, I'll take a bromo seltzer and that'll be the end of you?
Yes.
No, tell it to me.
Well, this guy was... Wait, you just told me the answer. I thought you said you never heard it.
Oh, stop, Jack. That's one of the oldest jokes in the world.
Mary, jokes happen to be my business. And if that was the oldest joke in the world, I'd be the first one to know it.
Should I let him have it, folks?
Never mind. Do me a favor, will you, Mary? Go out and come back in again.
Well, gee, Jack, as long as you're telling jokes, why don't you tell a good one? I heard a gag last night that was terrific.
Oh, you did, eh?
Yeah. A man walked into the house and said to his wife, it's raining cats and dogs outside.
Uh-huh.
And she said, how do you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said,
I just stepped in a poodle. I know where you heard that, Mary, at the Wilshire Bowl. Phil Harris has been husking that for 3 years. That's his theme joke. You know, Don, Phil's idea of humor is really pitiful.
Oh, I don't know about that, Jack. I was at the bowl one night, and the people screamed at him.
Sure they scream at him. Every time he finishes a gag, he has a waiter throw a custard pie in his face. That's why.
I didn't see anybody do that.
Oh, well, you must have been their bucket of water night. That's his idea of changing material.
Well, I'll say one thing about Phil. He sure attracts the young collegiate crowd. All the college boys go there.
They have to go there, Mary. That's part of their initiation. Before they can join a fraternity, they have to either listen to Harris or sleep all night in a graveyard.
In a graveyard?
Yes, and you'll be surprised at the number of kids around here that aren't afraid of ghosts. Yes, sir.
You know, Jack, Phil sure believes in that college spirit. Look at that sign on the bass drum.
Oh, yeah. Phil Harris and his collegians. Look, he spells collegians with one L.
Well, he spells Phil with two, so it's all even.
You know, Mary, sometimes I think that Phil...
Jiggers, here he comes now.
Don't jiggers me. Now, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. What's going on?
Well, to tell the truth, Phil, for the last 5 minutes, we've been talking about you.
Well, a little buildup ain't never hurt nobody.
No, Phil, and never done you no good either. Your grammar's worse than Abe Lyman's, and he never got beyond block.
Well, who cares about grammar? I got other things to worry about.
Oh, I can imagine. Say, Phil, I noticed that new sign you got on the bass drum. What happened to that corny painting you used to have there?
Corny?
Yeah, you know, the one with the yellow moon and the green river and the purple trees. Remember that one, Mary?
Yeah, he used to call it Dipsy Doodle by Rembrandt.
That's the one. Whatever happened to that painting, Phil?
I sold it to the Metropolitan Museum in New York.
You mean the Museum of Fine Art?
I don't know what they got there, but that's the joint that bought it.
Phil, are you crazy?
Crazy nothing. Someday that picture will be hanging in Paris, right next to the Mona Lulu.
Well, I'm not going to even bother to correct that. How do you like that, Mary? The most famous painting of a woman in the world, and Phil doesn't even know her name.
If she were alive, he'd know her name and phone number.
And her address and what she's doing on Friday night. Well, I got myself on a detour for no reason at all. And besides...
Hey, Jack, why don't you tell Phil that story the sound man told you? He'll get a kick out of it.
Oh, he wouldn't even get it.
Come on, Jackson, what is it? Let's hear it.
All right, Phil. Do you know the one about the fellow who was walking down the street and his pink alligator snapped at him?
Know it. I'm the guy that drank the bromo.
There you are, fellas. He's always got a brilliant comeback, even if he has to make a bum out of himself. Oh, Dennis?
Yes, please?
How about a... How about a song before we get involved again?
Okay, Mr. Benny. I'm going to sing an old favorite by Stephen Foster called Genie with the Light Brown Hair.
Oh, that's swell, Dennis. I love those old songs.
Old songs, old gags. What this program needs is glands.
Mary, you just attend to your own little knitting. I'll handle the show. Sing, Dennis, and the guy that drank the bromo.
I dream of Jeannie with a light brown hair, born like a vapor on the golden air. I see her tripping where the bright streams play, happy as a daisy along her way. Many are the wild notes a merry voice would pour, many are the blithe birds that warble them all. Oh, I dream of Jeannie with the light brown hair, floating like a vapor on the soft summer air. I long for Jeannie with the day dawn smile, radiant with gladness, warm with winning guile. I hear a melody, the tune to love, warm as a sunlight from heaven above. Many are the fond notes a merry voice would call, echoed by the birds in the grove.
Genie with the light brown hair, sung by Dennis Day. And Dennis, those old songs always do something to me. I love them.
Me too.
Genie with the light brown hair. What a grand title. You know, Dennis, I used to have light brown hair in my hair.
Why, Jack, from the pictures I've seen of you, I thought you had black hair.
No, Don, it was brown. Sort of a russet brown. You know, just like the leaves in autumn.
Well, rake them up and let's get on with the show.
Mary, I wish you'd stop with those interruptions. Anyway, Dennis, I noticed another thing. Your singing seems to improve every week. You're gaining poise and confidence.
Well, thanks, Mr. Benny.
Just think, this is your 7th week on my program.
7 weeks? Gee.
Yes, sir.
Am I going to get paid pretty soon?
Pretty soon, Dennis. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going to...
Hey, Jackson, why don't you pay the kid?
Phil, I intend to pay him. I'm merely holding his salary until he's a little older. I'm teaching Dennis how to save money.
Well, he's learning from the top man.
Thanks, Miss Livingston. And if I were you, I wouldn't say another word unless you rube it up on the Lum and Abner program. And now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we are going
Here you are, Dennis. Did you sing your song yet?
Yes, Mother.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Day.
Good evening.
Hmm.
Oh, Mother, you should have been here a few minutes ago. Mr. Benny told the funniest joke.
It was rather good. Tell it to her, Dennis.
Well, Mr. Benny was walking down the street leading a pink alligator.
Oh, stewed, eh?
Stewed, it wasn't me, Mrs. Day. Dennis got the story all wrong. I never touch a drop of liquor.
Then why have you got that red nose?
Because I'm a comedian. What do you think? My tie lights up, too. This story, Mrs. Day, is about a man who takes a bromo seltzer and gets rid of a pink alligator.
What's funny about that?
Nothing. It's very sad. I'm crying like anything. Oh, what a dame.
What's that?
I said, oh, what a game. I saw UCLA play Santa Clara yesterday. It was thrilling. And now, ladies and gentlemen, if you will please forgive my outburst. As I started to announce, tonight we are going to offer an original little playlet all about Thanksgiving, written especially for the occasion by Mary Livingston. Mary, let me have it, will you?
Oh, Jack, I forgot to tell you.
What?
I changed my mind about a Thanksgiving play, and I wrote a poem instead.
A poem?
Hey, Mary, you mean to say we're not going to do a Thanksgiving play?
No.
Gee, and I was all set to be one of them pilgrims.
Oh, fine. You'd make a great pilgrim, Phil.
Well, I would. Listen, buddy, my ancestors came over on the Mayflower.
Oh, did a Doc and Dixie? I thought your family always lived in Tennessee.
Not originally. You see, we migrated from Massachusetts.
Migrated? You don't by any chance mean you migrated.
All right, we moved. Forget it.
Migrated. You hear that, Mary?
Yeah, he put in an extra syllable in it.
You're not palooling.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we get out of the mood, let me say a few words about Jalelo.
Jalelo?
It is economical, easy to make, and comes in six delicious flavors. So look for the big red letters on the box.
Thanks, Don. You survived the day. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as we have no Thanksgiving play...
Mary Livingston's going to read a Thanksgiving poem.
Oh, no, nothing doing.
Oh, gee, it's swell, Jack.
I don't care. You're not going to read it.
Jack, Benny, you let me read this poem or I won't buy my Christmas card from you this year.
All right, a lot I make on the ones you get. You don't even have your name printed on them. Now, go ahead with your poem.
Okay.
What's the title of it?
The title is Thanksgiving, You're a Little Mixed Up, Aren't You, Kid?
Well, that fits. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, Thanksgiving, you are with us twice this year, with your pumpkin pie and dressing, and your turkey, front and rear.
That's the part I always get.
The pilgrims planned in days of yore that you'd come once, not anymore. But now you are a double feature, and we don't know which day to greet you.
Greet you?
That's what I said, you gorgeous creature.
Now, don't be funny. Go ahead with the poem.
Suppose we had two everything, two New Year's Eves to laugh and sing, two Christmases, two Labor Days, and two Jack Bennies with two toupees.
Mary, you're too pressing. Are you through?
No, but I'm coming into the stretch.
Oh.
So Thanksgiving, I don't mind.
Well.
If you're a week before or a week behind.
Mm.
What's the difference? What the heck? The turkey's the guy that gets it in the neck. The end.
Very good. Mary, that was silly, but you came through with flying colors. And now, Phil, how about a number to kind of break things up here?
Okay, Jackson, what do you want us to play? Anything special?
Well?
You name it, and we'll play it.
All right, how about that number you rehearsed all morning? You know, the only one you can possibly play.
Oh, okay. Hit it, boys.
He asked for a request yet. Hold it a minute, Phil. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
Are you a little mixed up on account of the two Thanksgivings this year?
Yes, I am. Why?
I was in a fog when we only had one. Goodbye.
He's not kidding, folks. He's got his shoes on backwards. Play, Phil.
Mr.
a swing version of an old favorite played by Phil Harris and his orchestra. And now, fellas...
Hey, what's the matter? Aren't you going to complain about the number we just played?
No, Phil, I thought it was pretty good. I liked it, didn't you, Mary?
Yeah, it was swell. Did you like it, Don?
I thought it was okay. How'd you like it, Jack?
Oh, it was great. How'd you like Phil's number, Mary?
Well, I thought it was a little loud in spots, didn't you, Don?
Yes, it seemed a little off here and there. What did you think of it, Jack?
I thought it was lousy. And now, fellas...
Hey, what is this, a rib?
Yes, Phil, we were just kidding. I thought your number sounded exceptionally good. Didn't you, Mary?
Feel me out. I'm tired.
Now, fellas, as I started to say a little while ago, and before I forget it, Thursday being Thanksgiving, I want all of you to come over to my house for a real old-fashioned turkey dinner. How about it?
Oh, that's great, Jack. We'll be there.
And Dennis, this invitation goes for you also.
His mother, too?
Yes, Mrs. Day, my party wouldn't be complete without you.
You don't sound very sincere about it.
Well, what do you want me to do, send you a mash note? Glad to have you. The more, the merrier. Good heavens.
Say, Jack, is this party going to be like the one you gave last Thanksgiving?
What do you mean?
I mean, is the turkey going to be leg of lamb?
Don't worry about that, Mary. This is going to be a real dinner. I've got the biggest, fattest, juiciest turkey you ever saw.
Where'd you run over it?
I didn't run over it. It's a live turkey. I got it in my garage right now. It's roosting on my Maxwell.
That's all that car needs.
Well, you wait till you see that bird. I bet it weighs 65 pounds.
65 pounds? Why, Jack, you must be mistaken about that.
Oh, no, I'm not, Don. I had it on the scales. It's an enormous thing.
65 pounds? Oh, you're kidding.
I'm not kidding. Wait till next Thursday and you'll see for yourself. It's going to be a swell party.
How many people are you expecting, Jack?
Well, there'll be our gang, and then I invited Clark Gable and Carol Lombard, Bob Taylor and Barbara Stanwyck, Tyrone Power and Annabella.
Oh, Jack, you always ask them to every party you give, and they never show up.
Well?
Why don't you stop inviting them?
I can't stop now. They'll think I'm mad at them. You know how it is.
How can they be mad at you when they don't even know them?
I don't even know them. Listen, Phil, I know every one of those stars personally.
Sure, Jack sells them their Christmas cards.
Mary, will you stop harping on that? The only reason you ever got cards from me is because I happen to have some left over.
Every year.
Oh, quiet. Now, don't forget, fellas, Thursday night at my house.
Oh, okay, we'll be there, Jack. You know that.
Boy, we're going to have a big turkey and cranberry sauce and mashed potatoes. And, Don, guess what kind of jello we're going to have for dessert?
Strawberry?
No.
Raspberry?
No.
Cherry?
No.
Orange?
No.
Lemon?
No. Give up?
Yes.
Lie. You see, Don, you almost had it.
There's a kindergarten commercial if I ever heard one.
Never mind, that's what we're going to have. Now, look, kids, if I don't see you again before Thanksgiving, be sure and be at my house by 7 o'clock sharp. And don't eat a big lunch, so you'll really enjoy the turkey. I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
All right, what do you want?
Well, boss, I just heard you talking about a big Thanksgiving party Thursday night. That's my night off.
I'm sorry, Rochester, but you'll have to work. You can take a day off some other time.
I can get my twin brother to take my place.
I don't want your twin brother.
Well, he looks just like me.
I don't care if he does. I want you to be at my house on Thursday night.
How about me in spirit and my brother in person?
Rochester, don't try any tricks. I can tell the difference between you and your twin brother.
That's more than his gal can.
Never mind. Now, look, Rochester, I want you to get that turkey up to 70 pounds by Thanksgiving, so go out in the garage and feed it.
I'm working on a Christmas card.
They can wait. Now, go out in the garage and feed the turkey.
Okay. Oh, say, boss, I meant to ask you something about that bird. Are you sure it's a turkey?
What do you mean, am I sure it's a turkey?
Well, I went out in the garage a few minutes ago, and she laid an egg as big as a cantaloupe.
As big as a cantaloupe? What are you talking about?
Not only that, but every time I go in there, she sticks her head in a bucket of sand.
What?
Boss, you bought an ostrich.
I bought an ostrich?
That's right. She just ate the headlights off your car.
The headlights? How do you know?
She had two Adam's apples, and they were going down fast.
It's all your fault, Rochester. You were with me when I went shopping for a turkey. Why did you let me buy an ostrich?
I told you it was a pretty big bird for the money, but you know you.
Well, I guess there's nothing we can do about it now. isn't that awful. I got a polar bear in the guest room and an ostrich in the garage.
And mice in the pantry. Let's move out.
Now, don't get panicky, Rochester. I'll be home in a few minutes. Meanwhile, call up the market and order a turkey.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
What?
Have you changed your mind about using my twin brother Thursday night?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'll figure out something. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Rochester. Rochester. Well, I'll be darned.
What's the matter, Jack?
Plenty. That big turkey I bought turned out to be an ostrich.
Oh, boy. You're going to be lonesome on Thanksgiving.
I am not. Now, Mary, don't worry. We're going to have a swell dinner. Play, Phil. I wonder if you can eat an ostrich. I don't know.
This year, some folks are celebrating Thanksgiving on the 23rd of the month, others on the 30th. Well, either way, I'd like to offer a suggestion in regard to your holiday menu. For dinner, of course, there'll be plum pudding or pumpkin pie. But later on in the evening, when supper time comes, bring the day's feasting to a fitting close with a truly out-of-the-ordinary dessert, a shimmering dish of golden lemon jello. Now, there's really a luscious-looking dessert, ladies and gentlemen, a grand treat full of the ripe, tingling flavor of juicy lemons fresh from the tree and glowing with the warm color of sunshine. And you can serve it in shapely molds garnished with fruit, nuts, and maraschino cherries. Or it can be sliced into dainty cubes, tumbled into parfait glasses, and topped with snowy whipped cream. Either way, it adds up to a mighty slick dessert that will catch every eye and capture every taste. And that goes for all the rest of Jell-O's six delicious flavors. Strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime. Jell-O, remember, is a light dessert. Just the thing to appeal after a heavy midday meal. And it's quick and easy to make with, and Mother will appreciate it, after cooking a big Thanksgiving dinner. So order genuine Jell-O from your grocer tomorrow.
This is the last number of the seventh program in the current Jell-O series, and we will be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. Now, don't forget, Mary, next Thursday night at my house for a real Thanksgiving dinner.
Count me out, Jack.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going to serve that ostrich. I'm going to have a turkey.
Oh, you are, eh?
Yes.
Well, if I find a headlight in the dressing, watch out.
Oh, don't worry. Good night, folks, and a happy Thanksgiving.
The Jack Benny program from the 19th of November, 1939 on NBC. You're listening to Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier, bringing you Thanksgiving programs from radio's golden age. Now time for the Hallmark Playhouse with an episode that aired on Thanksgiving, 1948, just a week after Jack Benny made an appearance on the program in a Stephen Leacock story called My Financial Career, regarded as one of the best of that show's run. This episode from November 25th, 1948 on CBS with the play Free Land.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we have a story admirably suited, I would say, to the mood of all of us tonight. The mood of Thanksgiving. It's good to have this mood in which we can look around us and feel without any smugness or self-satisfaction that we are lucky people and that the luck began, as indeed most luck does, through hard work and sacrifice. These are among the great things we remember today, and few stories could be more appropriate than the one we present tonight, a story by Rose Wilder Lane entitled Free Land. And for that matter, there is appropriateness also in Miss Lane's having written this fine story, since she was born in the Dakota Territory, and her mother was one of the original pioneers who had come out from the East in the old homesteading days. This virile background lends an inspired quality to the story we tell tonight, and we are additionally privileged to have in the starring role one of Hollywood's most charming and distinguished actresses, Miss Martha Scott. And now, Frank Goss, would you take over for a moment, please?
For a Christmas greeting your friends will long remember, make your selections now from the complete Hallmark collection on display at the Friendly Store where you buy Hallmark cards. On the back of every one is the identifying Hallmark that says, you cared enough to send the very best.
Free land. The phrase was on everyone's lips, and it had an exciting, adventurous sound to it. One stood at evening looking west across the well-tilled, fruitful acres of Minnesota, wondering about it. Wondering about Dakota and what treasures might be in store for those who went west to claim that free land. One stood and wondered if David And then one turned and went quietly in and shut the door against the thought. To lose David would be to lose all hope for the future.
I'm a little late getting here tonight, Mary. I was talking to my father.
I wasn't sure you were coming, David.
What's in the kettle?
Apple butter.
Smells good. Where are your folks?
They went over to Cousin Laura's.
Mary, do you have to stay out here in the kitchen stirring the jelly?
Not jelly, apple butter. Yes, it might stick.
Oh, well, I wanted to tell you something, but I didn't want to tell you in front of a kettle of apple butter.
I think you can depend on the kettle of apple butter not to repeat it.
I'm going west, homesteading. Father's letting me go, and he's giving me Whitefoot and Star, so I'll have a good team. And he's loaning me the money to start out on.
Oh? Well, that's nice. That's very nice, David. I sure hope you'll be very happy.
I'm going to Yankton tomorrow to file on a claim. For $14 and a half, I'll get me a quarter section. And I can have another quarter section by promising to set out 10 acres of trees and cultivate them for 5 years. I'll have 320 acres.
320?
And then next week, I'm going out to take possession of the claim. I thought I'd build a shanty on it and then come back by Thanksgiving. For you.
For me?
Well, of course. You didn't think I'd go without you.
Oh, David. David.
Mary, I'm not one of those romantic guys that know how to make a lot of fancy speeches. But I do love you. And I'll do my best to provide for you and make a good home. If you'll marry me.
Oh, David, I'll be so happy to marry you. Oh, the apple butter's burning. Quick, help me take it off the stove. Apple butter, burnt fingers, and burning beautiful sparks of excitement deep inside of me. And at last the words were mine that I'd been waiting for all my life. To have and to hold, to love and to honor, forsaking all others so long as we both shall live. It was Thanksgiving morning, and the world was at its beginning. After the wedding, David and I got on the train. We were on our way. A new country, new land, and a new life. At sunset, the ride ended, and David took my arm and helped me across the frozen street to the hotel. Early the next day, David piled our things in a big wagon sleigh, and we started for our claim. The strings of sleigh bells on the horses added a bright, gay music to the morning, and it seemed to me as the horses raced towards the horizon that we were flying into the future and the whole world belonged to us. But in the afternoon, a level gray cloud began to stretch towards us and the wind began to rise.
There's a railroad camp down there. I hope we can make it before the storm breaks.
What do you bet we do?
Hold on, darling. Hold on.
Storm hit. There was no direction to it. Winds came violently from all sides, even upward and down. The snow was blinding. The horses plodded ahead. Gradually, I felt the pain of cold leaving my ears and cheeks, and I rubbed them and slapped them. It was impossible to speak. Finally, the horses stopped. David shoved me out of the sled.
Hang on to the sled. Don't let go for a minute. I'm going to cut the horses loose. They'll have to shift for themselves. Then we'll unload the sled and try to turn it over.
Keep rubbing your face with snow, David. It's not nearly as bad under here.
Funny, I remembered my father telling me about turning a wagon sled over once during a snowstorm and getting under it. I'm sure glad he told me that story.
Pretty soon we're going to be buried in the snow.
We'll make out all right. Snow is warm and there's air in it. We can live quite a while that way. Move over so I can put my arm around you. Love me?
Oh, David, I love you more than any woman ever loved any man anywhere in the world. What are you laughing at?
I'll bet you're the only woman anywhere in the world who told a man that under a sled in a snowstorm.
Somewhere, down underneath all this snow, is the land. Our land. Someday we'll look out through our windows and remember this. You'll remember this snowstorm, Mr. Beaton.
I'll remember you.
Come on out from under that sled and take a look.
Hey there. Need any help?
Peters. Mr. Peters.
Came out to look for you.
Your team drifted in 3 nights back. I got them stabled.
Oh, much obliged. This is my wife, Mary.
Hello?
This is Mr. Peters, our nearest neighbor.
Pleased to meet you. Your shanty is 9 miles northwest of here. You better stop off at my house and get thawed out.
It was spring before we were able to go on to our claim. We lived with the Peters family through that long, blustering winter, and by the time we actually got to our land, we were a lot older and wiser than when we started. We rode up at sunset, and in great sweeps of flaming color washed across the sky.
Let me lift you out of the wagon, Mrs. Beaton. You're going to be carried across this threshold.
The house was 12 by 12 with 2 doors, 2 windows, a floor, and a sod ceiling. David had stretched unbleached muslin neatly over the sod walls, and he'd built a prairie chimney solidly anchored with wires. The room looked light and clean.
Do you like it?
Like it? Oh, David, it's home, and it's beautiful. How long are you going to sit there over that account book? It's late, and you want to get up early.
I'm just going over what I spent in town today. Oh. $30 for a sod-breaking plow, $52.50 for the cow, and the oats and the supplies. I had less than $200 left of the money my father loaned us to start out on, and I haven't broken 1 acre of ground yet. You and I have to live for 16 months on land that gives us nothing but grass.
Oh, I've been meaning to tell you, in mid-November, maybe even Thanksgiving Day...
Oh, that reminds me. I knew I had another package for you. It's in my pocket. Yeah. Here it is.
Oh, David.
Mrs. Peters thought you might like some silk to make some things.
And I was wondering how I was going to tell you about the baby.
Why, Mrs. Beaton... What made you think you'd have to tell me? I'm the father.
You know, Mr. Beaton, I never once thought of that.
Furthermore, I told everyone in town that I was going to be a father.
Oh, and David.
Well, tomorrow morning I'm going to start breaking our ground.
Spring came into bud and summer flowered. A green shimmer was over the land, and whole stretches of meadow were carpeted with wildflowers. The lark sounded happy in the morning, and the land seemed warm and tender and full of promise. But the prairie grass twined its roots into the soil and held on stubbornly while you tried to plow it. The earth gritted its rocks and refused to be turned over. The heat pressed down like a heavy weight on your shoulders, and the wind tore and ripped at you every time you opened the door. David was up at dawn every morning to work his land. I'd be alone in the house with only the prairie wind to talk to. And I'd watch from the window for David to rest the team so I could take him a drink.
Darling, you don't have to come out every time I stop.
I like to, David.
The water's brackish. Wish we could do something about it.
The horses look worn out. You'll kill them making them plow this soil.
I stop all I can to let them rest.
Sometimes I think if there was just a tree. Do you realize we haven't seen a tree since we left home?
I'm going to plant some.
Well, maybe it isn't good land. Maybe
no, the land's all right. Just has to be conquered. And I'm going to conquer it.
Look, someone's coming.
It looks like the Peters wagon.
It is, and Nettie's with him. Come on.
Hello, Mr. Peters.
Hey. Dave. We're making up a posse. That fellow living in the shingle roof lean-to south of town was a claim jumper. Yesterday, the man arrived who owned the claim, and the claim jumper shot him.
Shot him?
Where's the man that did it?
He lit out right after the shooting. He's got a day's head start coming along.
Quick as I can saddle up. Come and help me unhitch.
All right.
David, no. No.
Mary.
Don't do it. Don't go out and track a man down in cold blood. David, not you.
Mary, the only justice we have out here is what we take into our own hands. That's the kind of a land this is.
I hate this land. The outlaws don't murder you. The land itself will. That's all you hear, the land. The land. I'm sick to death of it.
You'd die of the heat, or you'd die of the cold. You'd die of starvation, or loneliness, or insanity. The land, I hate the land. It'll kill us all and then grow on top of us. I hate the land.
Nettie, take her up to the house. She doesn't realize it. It's the heat and the baby coming. Take care of her, Nettie.
I know how you feel, Mary.
And look on their faces. That unholy fervor to track down and kill. And when they come back, you know the man you've loved and honored has helped to kill a man.
We have to have some sort of law. It'll be different when the country's organized.
Sometimes I don't think I can stay another week. Sometimes I think I can't stand it.
You'll get used to it, Mary. People get used to things they can't stand. Look at that sky. You have to say one thing for it. It's beautiful country.
Only a few miles away, there's civilization and peace. And the people in the land are neighbors and friends.
You're going back to Minnesota to have your child?
Yes. David feels we couldn't manage here.
That's right. Once the blizzards come, it might be impossible to get out here to help you.
It's going to be good to go home. So good to go home.
This is your home now, child.
No, this is exile. Nothing can take root in this soil. People least of all. When David came back from hunting the claim jumper, he told me the man had escaped to Iowa. He'd been arrested there and was being held for trial. We never mentioned it again. In October, the first blizzard stormed and lashed at us for 5 full days. And as soon as it lifted, David put me on the train for home. He planned to put things in order and then to join me in time for Thanksgiving, but it was April before another train was able to get through to that part of the country. I went back in April with my son in my arms.
He's quite a boy, isn't he?
He certainly is.
Mary, did you hate to come back?
No. All the way back to Minnesota, I found myself thinking, I'm going backwards, not forward. I'm going backwards. And when I was there in a civilized house with all the things I thought I'd been missing, I suddenly found myself missing the prairie wind. And I knew beyond all shadow of a doubt that Dakota's become my home.
Another year or two, and we'll really own something here.
That spring was glorious, and down under it, glorious, and down under it, under the grass, and down under the grass roots, David, under the grass roots, David found soil that was dark and rich. He sowed his 14.5 acres by hand, anxiously watching where the ever-present wind carried them. And when the seeds sprouted and came up in a green mist, I stood in the doorway and wept to see it. And as the days passed, you could see the wheat begin to tame the land and the tasseled heads stretch taller and taller. We watched it, prayed over it.
I don't like the looks of that sky.
David, what are you doing up at this hour? It's the middle of the night.
Out here, the stars always quiver in the wind. You never know when the wind will change. Rain on the pollen could mean disaster.
Yesterday, you said it was getting too hot.
I know. Yesterday was a scorcher. That could dry up the pollen before the kernels form.
But nothing hurt the pollen. The kernels began to form. The fields, no longer silky, were covered with the young green heads. And the wheat was up to David's chest, and when the wind rippled over it, it looked like light changing on a solid surface. It was there before our eyes, large, solid kernels, solid heads, 36 bushels to the acre, safe and sure, actual, true.
36 bushels to the acre? There's parts that'll run 40 bushels, or I'm a liar. Mary, I tell you, this is the greatest country on God's footstool. Let the wind blow, let the sun blaze. The wheat is safe. The wheat is safe.
David and Mr. Peters, helping each other, began mowing the wheat and tying the sheaves. There was no relief from the heat. The dry earth cracked wide. They kept wet claws in the crowns of their hats to ward off sunstroke. They worked day and night. They had only about 6 loads left to put up when I ran outside with the baby in my arms. The crashing thunder was almost deafening.
Overhead, a mass of black clouds was twisting and writhing with flashes of red and green light. I saw David and Peters running toward me and the dark mass in the sky coming down toward them.
It's a cyclone, Mary! A cyclone!
What do we do?
It's going to hit the earth any minute.
We have no storm cellar.
Oh, well.
We can't get down there. It's too small. It's open.
Get down. Get on the ground. Hold the baby under. Here.
It's all right. It's all over. You all right, Mary?
I think so. How about you, Mr. Peters?
A little blown up, but alive.
There's the rain. Come on, we gotta get to the house.
The house was still there. Although a lot of things in it were smashed and broken. And when daylight came, we saw the wheat stacks flattened and scattered, every sheaf sopping wet on the muddy ground. But there was a new consciousness of existence, of being able to breathe, to see light again, to walk across the earth. Whatever had been taken from us, a new appreciation of just being alive had been given in return. And now everyone set to work to save their fields. The water must be shaken from each sheaf. The sheaf must be set upright in the muddy stubble and parted so the wind could reach the heads. We would save it. Please, God, would we save it. And then the threshers came and the triumph. Oh, the triumph of their coming.
Dave, I've never seen grain to beat this.
You haven't, eh?
No, sir. Taste one of these kernels, Mary.
Hmm?
You can tell by the taste.
It has a nutty flavor, hasn't it?
That's right. And it's got the taste of good earth in it. A1. And it's going to run darn near 40 bushels to the acre. Man's got to go some to beat that, Dave.
We had our first crop. Money to fix the roof, get a few pieces of equipment and some stock. We had a son, and soon we would have another child. We'd put our home on the land, and we would make that home in the land something we could be proud of. And then we had a letter from David's folks. They were coming out to visit us. David was happy about it at first, and then, after a few days, very quiet.
I wonder what my father will think of the place. He never thought much of our coming out here. That's why I wanted to pay back the money he advanced as soon as possible. But we still don't have it.
Oh, darling, I think your father will see the land just as we see it. And so David's father and mother, who had pioneered their land in Minnesota, looked over our pioneering in Dakota. And they didn't say much one way or the other until the last night of their visit. When we were all sitting together, watching the long summer twilight deepen into night.
How much would you say you're in debt, David, in round figures?
Well, Dad, in round figures, about $900, besides what I owe you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good country. This farm's going to be worth something.
I wouldn't wonder. Yes, you stuck it out, and now you've got something. Your mother and I are proud of you and Mary.
David, did you hear that?
Aren't you going to tell them, Jim?
Don't rush me, Mother. Fact is, my will's made out, David. It gives you and your sister an even share of the property I leave. As soon as we get home, I'm going to send you $2,000 and charge it against your share of the estate.
Oh.
Dad.
Well, I don't know what to say, but...
We want you to have an easier time than we did. We're going to help you, and then in turn you'll help your children. That's how families survive, and how the country grows and expands. By helping you, we are helping a little in the development of Dakota.
And when you help your children, they'll help push the frontier further west. You're right, son. It's good country.
Long after David's father and mother had gone to sleep, we stood in the doorway, listening to the wind, savoring the warm summer fragrance of the land, dreaming of what lay beyond it for our children.
What are you thinking about?
I was thinking... how wonderful it was that we got this land.
Funny. So was I.
Well, we better get some sleep or we'll never be able to get up in the morning.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
We closed the door. The wind whispered to us and lulled us. And outside, the land waited. And I found myself thinking back 5 Thanksgivings ago. 5 Thanksgivings when both the land and I were untried and unproved. When the land and I were enemies. And I began to pray that it was tamed now. Broken to our plow, ready to work for us. I prayed that it would be for us and our children as it had been for our parents and our grandparents. That although the land had come to us free, we had paid for it with honest labor and passed it on to the next generation as a heritage. So that on future Thanksgivings, our children would be able to say, let us be thankful for all the rich fruit of the earth and sun that we have received. And let us be thankful for a free land, a free country.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from Thanksgiving Day 1948 on CBS. And that wraps it up for this hour of Thanksgiving shows from Radio's Golden Age on Tuned to Yesterday. Be with us again for more great programs from Radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Lipponier. Happy Thanksgiving.